Today is Tuesday, December 29th, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, the United States tops 19 million COVID cases.
The United States has topped 19 million cases of COVID-19 as one of the country's worst hit states is set to extend its lockdown.
And more than 2,000 people. Violence and hunger in northern Mozambique.
Now here in Cabo Delgado, the situation is very serious, very dramatic, because the number of people displaced by this conflict is increasing.
Plus, the U.S. Senate may override President Donald Trump's veto for the first time. These stories and more are next.
At his inauguration,
our top story today is in the U.S. The United States topped 19 million COVID cases on Monday as hospital intensive care units remain filled to overflowing across much of California, a U.S. coronavirus hotspot. Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson reports.
Around 7% of the electorate were unable to vote.
19 million cases of COVID-19 as one of the country's worst hit states is set to extend its lockdown. Hospitals across the whole country have been strained to the brink all month, and California has been hit the hardest. Intensive care units in the state, now a major U.S. hotspot, are full to overflowing. This past week, California has been averaging 230 COVID deaths a day. Governor Gavin Newsom said restrictions on gatherings and business activities would almost certainly be renewed for another 3 weeks, as he warned things are likely to get worse after the holiday season. California residents are under some of the toughest restrictions in the U.S. They're told to remain at home and avoid travel, except for grocery shopping, medical appointments, and daily exercise, while restaurants are limited to takeout and bars are closed altogether. The country as a whole has reported 333,000 deaths since the pandemic began, and as of Sunday, 118,000 people were in U.S. hospitals with the disease.
That's Reuters' Flora Bradley Watson. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has offered a message of hope and healing for the new year to the hundreds of millions of people worldwide whose lives have been shattered by the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN Chief Guterres does not hide his sorrow at the difficulties engendered by this once-in-a-century pandemic. COVID-19, he says, has upended the lives of millions, plunging the world into suffering and grief. He describes 2020 as a year of trials, tragedies, and tears, a year that continues to create havoc and claim new victims as COVID-19 rages on. The pandemic, he says, has increased poverty, inequality, and hunger to new heights.
But the new year lies ahead, and with it we see rays of hope. People extending a helping hand to neighbors and strangers, frontline workers giving their all, scientists developing vaccines in record time, countries making new commitments to prevent climate catastrophe.
Guterres says climate change and the pandemic are crises not easily overcome. He says it will take enormous work, commitment, and above all, a willingness of all people to work together for the same goal.
If we work together in unity and solidarity, these rays of hope can reach around the world. That's the lesson of this most difficult year. Together, let's make peace among ourselves and with nature, tackle the climate crisis, stop the spread of COVID-19, and make 2021 a year of healing.
Guterres says 2021 can be a year of healing divisions that were made worse from the deadly infection and broken economies if people work together. He says the best New Year's resolution for 2021 is to heal the planet. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. President-elect Joe Biden late Monday accused the Trump administration of blocking communication between national security officials and Biden's transition team, which could undermine U.S. security. Speaking in his hometown, Wilmington, Delaware, Biden said his team has faced, quote, obstruction from the political leadership at the Defense Department and the Office of Management and Budget as they've sought to gather necessary information to continue the transition of power.
We need to make sure that nothing is lost in the handoff between administrations. My team needs a clear picture of our force posture around the world and our operations to deter our enemies. We need full visibility into the budget planning underway at the Defense Department and other agencies in order to avoid any window of confusion or catch-up that our adversaries may try to exploit. But as I said from the beginning, we have encountered roadblocks from the political leadership at the Department of Defense and the Office of Management and Budget. Right now, we just aren't getting all the information that we need for the ongoing, outgoing, and from the outgoing administration in key national security areas. It's nothing short, in my view, of irresponsibility.
Biden's remarks came after he was briefed by members of his national security and defense teams and advisors. Biden also warned of, quote, enormous damage, unquote, done to the national security apparatus by the Trump administration.
And the truth is, many of the agencies that are critical to our security have incurred enormous damage. Many of them have been hollowed out in personnel, capacity, and in morale. In the policy processes that have atrophied or have been sidelined, in the despair of our alliances and the disrepair of those alliances, in our absence from key institutions that matter to the welfare of the American people, in the general disengagement from the world, and all of it makes it harder for our government to protect the American people.
Trump has refused to concede an election he lost by more than 7 million votes. His administration did not authorize final cooperation with the Biden transition team until November 23rd, weeks after the election. Acting Defense Secretary Christopher Miller has responded to the accusations of obstructing the transition by saying that the Pentagon has conducted over 160 interviews with hundreds of officials. He said they've provided over 5,000 pages of documents to Biden's transition team, more than the team requested. In last night's speech, Biden also spoke about what he said is the need to rebuild global alliances to fight climate change, address the pandemic, and prepare for future ones, and confront what he said is the growing threat posed by China.
But right now, there's an enormous vacuum. We're going to have to regain the trust and confidence of a world that has begun to find ways to work around us or work without us.
Biden assumes the presidency by January 20. The House of Representatives approved a change to the coronavirus economic stimulus bills recently signed by President Trump. AP's Ed Donahue reports.
The change would follow the president's insistence. $600 checks to Americans should be $2,000 checks. Massachusetts Democrat Richard Neal used a reference to A Christmas Carol.
Marley warned Ebenezer Scrooge there was a way for redemption, and that was through a new generosity and a new kindness. And we could emulate that here.
Allies of the president have opposed more spending. Texas Republican Kevin Brady says the money can't be put to good use.
At this point in the recovery, the fact is it's hard to stimulate a Main Street that's locked down by local politicians. This won't help local restaurants get their workers permanently back.
The outcome of the bill is uncertain in the GOP-led Senate. Ed Donahue, Washington.
Members of the Senate are expected to meet today to consider an override of a presidential veto of a defense policy bill. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Now that the House has voted overwhelmingly to override President Trump's veto, Senate leaders will consider similar action this week. The bipartisan bill, which pays for billions in military programs and provides a pay raise for the troops, was rejected by the commander-in-chief because it doesn't punish social media companies and it would allow name changes at bases named after Confederate leaders. House Democrat Adam Smith heads the House Armed Services Committee.
The president vetoed this because of something that isn't in the bill.
His Republican counterpart, Mac Thornberry.
This vote is about supporting our troops and defending America.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell supported the defense bill when it initially passed. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
This is the Voice of America. A strong earthquake hit Croatia on Tuesday with some injuries reported, as well as considerable damages to roofs and buildings southeast of the capital. The European Mediterranean Seismological Center said the earthquake of 6.3 magnitude hit 46 kilometers, that is 17 miles southeast of Zagreb. Belarus has announced the start of mass coronavirus vaccinations with the Russian-developed Sputnik V shot. it becomes the second country after Russia to roll out the vaccine, which is still undergoing late-stage studies to ensure its safety and effectiveness. The first batch of Sputnik V arrived in Belarus on Tuesday. Russia has been widely criticized for giving Sputnik V regulatory approval in August after the vaccine only had been tested on a few dozen people. This month, Russian authorities started mass vaccinations with Sputnik V, even though it is still undergoing late-stage trials. Argentina also plans to start using a Russian vaccine on Tuesday. Tens of thousands of supporters of a splinter group in the governing Nepal Communist Party have rallied to demand the Prime Minister's ouster and the reinstatement of the parliament he dissolved amid an escalating party feud. The protesters chanted slogans against Prime Minister Kadar Prasad Oli while marching peacefully in the capital as thousands of riot police kept close watch. Tensions have been growing between Oli and the party's co-chair, Pushpa Kamal Dahal. You are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Growing violence and insecurity are increasing the threat of hunger and infectious diseases in Mozambique's northern province of Cabo Delgado. Aid group Doctors Without Borders say conditions are deteriorating every day as a desperate population hopes for assistance. For more, I spoke with Luis Otavio, project coordinator of the group.
Now here in Cabo Delgado, the situation is very serious, very dramatic, because the number of people displaced by this conflict in Cabo Delgado is increasing. We have nearly 500,000 people displaced in the province. So the need is also increasing, because these people need the basic things like water, sanitation, even shelter for their tents, food and medical care.
Are you facing any fears or challenges of infectious diseases?
Ourselves, as international volunteers, the infectious diseases like the COVID pandemic now, and also malaria. For the beneficiaries, for the people, for displaced people, they are more exposed to disease because of this lack of good conditions. So they are living in pain, so they don't have water, they are exposed to cholera, to watery diarrhea, they are exposed as well to malaria, and of course to COVID, and also desnutrition. Desnutrition also is a problem here.
There are reports of challenging security situations. Can you tell us about it?
The security situation, it's also difficult in the north cities, because now I'm based in Pemba, in the capital. It's the south of province, so Pemba is relatively safe now, I can say that. But the cities in the north, like Mocimboa da Praia, Macomia, and this Kisanga, this area in the north, the conflict is still there, and the people, they leave the area, and they try to come to safe, between commas, safe area in the south of province. So this is what I can say about security. So here in Pemba, we are not facing security issues, but the province, yes, there are a lot of conflicts.
How challenging is it for your organization to meet the needs of these thousands of refugees?
Very complicated, because UNICEF has, despite our efforts that we do to provide an answer, we have only a small portion of that we can address to these needs, especially not only UNICEF, but I believe also the other organizations. We need more supplies, more fundings, more human resources to respond to these needs. So we also have a very huge area to cover, from Pemba to Montepuez, that's another district. It's a huge distance to cover by only one organization.
Has any group or government responded to your calls for more assistance to these people?
Well, we try to work with the government as well, but as I told you, the crisis is huge, so it's difficult to respond in the right proportion to this crisis. That's why I was saying that we need more attention. I invite the international community to join us to recognize this conflict as a humanitarian problem, and also to help to respond it.
Now, how bad can things really get if there are no response to your request?
The situation is very complicated. Now also we are starting the cyclone season, the storm seasons, the rainy seasons. So these people will be more exposed to these storms, to cholera, to diarrhea, to lack of access, because daily movement is more complicated in this area. So the situation will be really bad, and the people might die in this situation.
What are the areas of the greatest need?
To be honest, the needs are everywhere. But in the north region, where the conflict is still there, we know that there are people there in needs, but we don't have access.
That's Luis Otavio, project coordinator for Doctors Without Borders, speaking with me from Cabo Delgado. Burkina Faso's Roch Kabore was sworn in for a second term on Monday and vowed to focus on peace, security, and national reconciliation in a country struggling with surging Islamist violence. Emery McCarthy of Reuters reports.
Burkina Faso's President Roch Kabore vowed to unite his country as he was sworn in for a second term on Monday.
Je jure devant le peuple burkinabé.
Escalating Islamist militancy has drawn the once stable West African nation into the turbulence of the wider Sahel region. And more than 2,000 people were killed in Burkina Faso this year in attacks by insurgents linked to Al-Qaeda and Islamic State. Ethnic and religious tensions fueled by the militant attacks have also increased, pulling at the seams of once peaceful communities. At his inauguration, Kabore said he would be particularly attentive to matters of national reconciliation, peace and security. Kabore won the November 22nd election with nearly 58% of the vote. But amid the violence, in which around 1 million people have been displaced, around 7% of the electorate were unable to vote. Kabore said he would launch consultations on a true national reconciliation in the coming months.
That's Reuters correspondent Emery McCarthy. Journalists in Kampala walked out of a news conference Monday after a top military officer accused them of being political activists. Tensions were running high ahead of the event after three journalists were allegedly attacked and injured by security forces while covering an opposition political rally on Sunday. Halima Atumani has the story from Kampala.
On Sunday night, journalists received a text message inviting them to a Monday morning press conference with the chief of Uganda's Defense Forces, General David Muhoozi. However, upon arrival, the 30 journalists who had come in were addressed instead by the political commissar for the Uganda People's Defense Forces, Brigadier General Henry Matsiko. After speaking about the upcoming 40th anniversary of the UPDF, Matsiko was asked why journalists are being targeted. Three journalists, including Ali Mivule of NTV Uganda and Ashraf Kasiri of Ghetto TV, were hit with tear gas canisters and rubber bullets by security forces on Sunday in the Masaka district. Kasiri was badly hurt and had to be put in a medically induced coma. The journalists were covering a campaign appearance by Bobi Wine, presidential candidate of the opposition National Unity Platform Party. Matsiko lectured the journalists, accusing them of being unprofessional and taking sides in the presidential campaign.
Even listening to some of you, the way you are presenting yourselves, I get an impression that you are moving into a different terrain of activism. And activism has its own dynamics. So once you are a journalist, prove to us that you are exercising professionalism. I have already regretted, and I'm saying, let us all, please.
Why don't you arrest me? Why do you shoot me?
We need to be fairly treated.
This time, yes, I know, I understand.
The comments caused an uproar, and journalists walked out of the news conference. Michael Kakumiro, a photojournalist with the Daily Monitor newspaper, who says he has previously been beaten by security forces, demanded that Matsiko apologize.
He came and started lecturing us as if we were politicians. We are not politicians. What we owe from security is an apology, and that has to come from the CDF himself.
The journalists are also demanding that top security officers issue a statement warning junior officers to allow journalists work in safety. They also want Enoch Avaine, the officer who shot at Mivule and commanded the Operation Sandy in Masaka, to be arrested, tried and penalized. Abubakar Lubowa, another Daily Monitor photojournalist, says their actions are in solidarity with their hospitalized colleagues.
What hurts us? Some of us have been covering state functions. But the moment you cover the opposition, then you become a bad journalist. The moment you cover the ruling government, then you're a very good journalist. So what should we do in this country? We love our country, but we can't work under such conditions.
After walking out of the media center, journalists were surrounded by security forces that included 15 police motorcycles, a police pickup truck, local defense unit officers armed with AK-47 rifles, and a police holding van. When asked why army officials had asked for reinforcement, UPDF spokesperson Brigadier General Flavia Biekwaso said the deployment was a mistake.
So these guys thought that actually we are under a problem. That's why they came as a rescue team. And you saw me coming out to tell them that no, there was no problem. Yes. Yes.
Journalists insist they will only resume covering security functions once they get an apology from the proper officials. Uganda votes for a new president on January 14. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Ghislaine Maxwell was denied bail by a U.S. judge on Monday, citing the risk the British socialite might flee from charges she assisted in the late financier Jeffrey Epstein's sex trafficking of girls. Reuters correspondent Brian Wood reports.
A British socialite accused of procuring underage girls for the late financier Jeffrey Epstein has been denied bail. A U.S. judge determined on Monday that Ghislaine Maxwell was a flight risk and should remain in jail until her trial set for July next year. The 59-year-old is accused of recruiting and grooming girls as young as 14 for sex in the mid-1990s, as well as lying under oath. Maxwell has denied any wrongdoing and said in her bail application she wanted to remain in New York to clear her name. The proposed package included more than $22 million posted by her and her husband, and home confinement with 24-hour monitoring. Maxwell's lawyers had argued her conditions were too harsh in the Brooklyn jail where she has been since July. They say she's been subject to constant surveillance and woken up every 15 minutes to ensure she's still breathing. Her former partner, Jeffrey Epstein, killed himself August 2019 while awaiting his own trial for sex trafficking charges. This is the second time Maxwell has been denied bail, and prosecutors cited her ability to hide her wealth and flee to countries where she has citizenship, France, and the United Kingdom. Her lawyers did not respond to requests for comment, nor did the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan. Maxwell faces up to 35 years in prison if convicted.
That's Reuters correspondent Brian Wood. A white Ohio police officer was fired Monday after body cam footage showed him fatally shooting 47-year-old Andre Hill, a black man, holding a cell phone and failing to administer first aid for several minutes. The Columbus Public Safety Director says Officer Adam Coy was fired hours after a hearing was held to determine his employment. The decision came after the director concluded a hearing to determine whether Coy's in the moment before and after the fatal shooting of Andre Hill on Tuesday were justified. Coy remains under criminal investigation for last week's shooting. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokville Yabaro, our colleague, Jason Patinkin, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great evening.
Your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the internet.